Welcome to Conversations About Running, the podcast from Running Trips. Today, Callum and I are joined by international 8 and 1500-meter runner Adele Tracy. Adele speaks to us from her training camp in Iten, Kenya, and training at altitude features prominently in our conversation. We also discuss Adele's love of interior design, her passion for her charitable work, as well as her decision to compete for Jamaica, and even delve very briefly into the Jamaican music scene. We hope you enjoy our chat with Adele, and thanks for listening to Conversations About Running. Adele, thank you very much for joining us on the podcast this morning. It's great to have you.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
Where in the world are you at the moment?
So I'm in Kenya, in Iten, and this is like the eighth time I've actually been here. I've been really fortunate to be able to come here on a number of occasions, and this time we haven't been able to get out here for a couple of years because of COVID and restrictions and things, so it's really nice to be back and I'm here with Melissa, Courtney, Brian and Amy Eloise Markov as well, so got a good camp ahead.
Loughborough camp. You could have just come to Loughborough if you're going to train with those girls.
Yeah, I could have, that's true. I might not have benefited from the altitude, but or had so much sunshine.
There's other benefits to being in Loughborough, I assure you.
Yeah.
they've got the altitude rooms at the...
Yeah, they have, To be fair, you could have done like sleep high, train low, because they've got the altitude hotel now on campus.
True that, yeah.
I'll give you the sunshine though.
Where specifically are you?
So we're staying at Lorna's camp, just like over the years, like it's just where we've always come, kind of get into a really easy routine, kind of meals are prepared for us and things, so that makes just recovering really easy. It's kind of where we've always kind of come, so it's just nice, and it kind of feels like every time we come back, we've kind of never left.
Yeah, we know the feeling. Callum and I have been there a number of times.
Okay, yeah. Do you guys, how do you feel about Iten? I love it. So,
in a nutshell, if I had to sum it up in as few words as possible, I love it. It's an amazing place to be. The atmosphere, usually the weather. How are you weather-wise at the moment?
Yeah, the weather's been great, actually. I've been here a few times in November, and that's kind of tricky because it does rain quite a lot, and that kind of makes running a little bit harder. Also, makes it difficult to wash your clothes, just like little things like that. So it's been actually really great here. It's been super warm and sunny, so we've been really lucky with the weather.
Last time I was there, I was washing my clothes and then hanging them up to dry in the sauna.
Oh, in the sauna. Wow, yeah, that's a good idea.
It wasn't really raining when we were there, was it, Kyle? It just wasn't like warm enough to dry clothes outside.
No, exactly. It was really interesting weather.
Although, Callum claims he can do 3 weeks in Kenya on hand luggage, so that's part of the problem.
Yeah. On hand luggage, wow.
Well, I did that's last time. Impressive. How long were we there for last time, Gavin?
Yeah, under 3 weeks.
Yeah, I only took hand luggage.
Well, yeah, but that's why you were struggling to get clothes dry in time, though, isn't it?
Yeah, true, because I only had one pair of shorts.
Okay, that makes me feel really extra because I have two big suitcases. One is pretty much full of food.
So that's an interesting point then. Is that something that you take quite seriously when you go on training camps, like say you know you have to bring certain things with you, or is that what sort of stuff is it that you're prepared?
Like I have quite extensive packing lists, I would say, particularly when you come here as well, because I think just having a little bit of continuity with what you're doing at home is important, so I tend to bring like a kettle for my room and just like pegs for the laundry, because obviously we're hand washing, some marigolds, like a lot of food, because there's marigolds, like
what's
rubber
that?
Gloves.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. I love how I just assume that everyone would know what that is. Rubber gloves for washing clothes. I've got like a packing list saved to my phone, which I always pull out for Kenya training camp. So I just like to make sure that I have like a lot of protein and recovery things like electrolytes and stuff in my suitcase too, because I'm vegetarian, I always have been, so that's just something I'm really mindful of when I'm away and I haven't got access to things that I would usually have at home.
Do you find going to Kenya then especially that you have to take certain like vitamins or supplements or anything like that Just because you might not be getting the same amount of protein from the meals.
So I just try and make sure that I'm having like a carb and protein recovery drink. So I tend to just have quite a few sachets of that for post sessions up here. But then I also bring some whey as well, just to, I don't know, either put in my oats or, you know, I bring some like almond butter and stuff like that. I've got like little sachets in the room of lentils and things like that, although they actually are really on it here. They make me an omelette most evenings, or I have lentils and beans at lunchtime. So yeah, I kind of got that protein side of things covered. It's just that additional stuff that I would usually try to implement, just to make sure that I'm getting the most out of each session, basically.
Yeah, I think HATC and the chefs and staff there have got loads better at catering for like vegan people and vegetarians over the last few years, because I remember the first couple of times I went there and you'd say, oh, I'm vegetarian, and they would kind of be like, what is that? But now it's like a
so
lot
the,
more.
Yeah, so Adele, for a little bit of back context, my wife used to manage the camp that you're staying in.
Oh, cool, nice.
Yeah, for about 3 years, around what, 2011, 2012 kind of time. Cool. Yeah, so I used to spend a lot of time there. When we were living there, we were eating meat, but then we've both been vegan for sort of, I don't know, probably about 7 or 8 years now. And the first time I went back and tried to ask for vegan food, they found it just kind of like, not hard to do it, but just kept laughing at me. Just kept like, not in a mean way, but just like, why don't you want that? Why don't you want that? And it was just kind of like, oh, okay, we'll bring you an omelette. I was like, oh, I don't really eat eggs. I was like,
okay, yeah.
And it was just like, culturally, it just wasn't really understood.
Yeah, no, I 100% hear you there. Like, that's, yeah, culturally, I'd say in Jamaica as well, very similar. I guess like certain dishes are a big part of, yeah, their routine. So trying to think how you would do that same dish without the meat or what have you is, so totally hear you.
That's something I was hoping to bring up a little bit later in the podcast, but as you touched on it, I'm slightly surprised to hear that, because I've never been to Jamaica, but I thought that, is it Itaw, the sort of Rasta type diet? I thought that was, which is very close, if not exactly the same as vegan. I thought that was really widespread in Jamaica.
Yeah, so like I would say the traditional dishes though, that kind of come in, so like you would have like your rice and peas and chicken, and yeah, there are loads of stews and, you know, curry goat sort of things that they do, but I would say majority it usually has like goat, chicken, something in it. So yeah, although there is a Rastafarian culture where they're vegetarian, a lot of vegetarians or vegans sometimes eat fish as well.
Right, okay.
So I have to be very much like, nothing with eyes is kind of my policy.
Yeah.
Sometimes I get the odd joke about a coconut. but yeah, it's I think it's fine as long as you just like simplify things. And when people get to know you as well, I think it's a lot more understood that that's just how you do things. I just always have been a vegetarian, so it's very much like, I'm not going to budge, or there's no wiggle room. So I think once people get to that and they understand
that. Is that, you say you've always been vegetarian, and is that how you were brought up, or did you just make that decision at a young age?
Yeah. I've always been brought up veggie. My mum is vegetarian. So is my sister and my brother as well. So it's just something
that's just normal.
The case. So I think a lot of people are always surprised when I say that I'm an athlete as well. But yeah, it's just all I know.
Yeah.
I wanted to, backtracking a little bit, the fact that you're out in A10, a lot of the reason people go to train at in A10 is because of the altitude, obviously. The main reason you're training at altitude is to get those kind of hypoxic benefits of the, you know, reduced oxygen levels, so that when you go back to sea level, you're a little bit aerobically stronger. Do you find that's beneficial for you as an 800 specialist? What's your decision for going to A10 for the altitude compared to something like, I don't know, maybe like Portugal or something like that, where the altitude isn't a factor?
Yeah, massively. I think for me, and actually Millie as well, Mr. Courtney, Brian, we've been coming here since 2014, was our first experience of altitude. And I think my first experience of even being at any height was Kenya. Yeah. And I feel like the reason why we keep coming back is because you just learn how to respect it when you go that high, that young. I mean, we must have been like 20 years old. I probably wasn't fit enough to be up here at the time. But yeah, my coach, Craig Winrow, was kind of like, I've brought other middle distance athletes out here. They've had a really good response. I think, we should try it. Absolutely loved my first experience here. It was really, really tough because I was not doing the amount of miles to kind of know how it would feel up here, or, had the fitness, I guess, aerobically to kind of be up here as well. But I think that's kind of where my bit, my this is like what I know. So anything lower, I'm kind of like have found a lot easier and a lot more manageable since. So I've been to Bromo, St Moritz, Flagstaff, other places that are slightly lower. But I think because I've been highest first and respected it, and really just taking the time to adjust and actually not really focus on how quick I'm running, just effort, and backed right off before I've come home. I've always had a really good response when I've dropped down, and I honestly feel amazing when I come down from being up this high. So I know that all the work that I'm putting in while I'm here, it's just really worth it. And I think Millie's had a really similar response in that too. And we've had some really great role models when we've been on these camps as well. Obviously, staying at Lorna's, you get into a really good routine, and being that young, it's probably really beneficial just to even have that.
Do you
So yeah, I think.
do you ever link up with like local athletes and local groups out there, or do you mainly kind of stick to your own training group?
We tend to do our own thing, and actually, even when it comes to kind of the work that my coach sets, he will try and link up with other athletes that I've come out here with and see if it fits in. But I very much do what I need to do for me, and I think that's probably why it works so well, when I do come this high.
Do you, is your coach with you?
He's not, no, he's actually in South Africa, with some of his other athletes, but yeah, me and Craig have been working together probably 10 years now, actually. And we're quite used to working from a distance. Like, I quite often go on a training camp on my own, and I'm pretty self-sufficient. So yeah, I think we've got a really good coach athlete relationship, that he knows that if he sets something and we communicate regularly, that I'll come back in good shape.
Is Craig coaching the other girls who you're with out there as well?
No, he doesn't actually.
They both have rock.
Yeah, they're both with Rob Denmark, and Craig's sort of a similar generation where they were on teams together and things, so they're quite friendly, so that works quite well. So when they have a session that I might be able to jump in with, then it's kind of, he knows that that's going to be a benefit to me too, so that's great.
So I've got a couple of questions relating specifically to the training, and specifically when you're up at high altitude. So first of all, I'm interested in how your training differs, if at all, when you're in a 10 versus when you're at sea level. And secondly, I'm wondering specifically what you do, if anything, regarding the fact that obviously everything you do at sea, in a 10, relatively for the same effort, is going to be much slower. Is that something that you just accept, or do you do something in order to kind of make sure that when you go home, you've still got that pace in your legs?
So I guess for starters, a lot of the stuff that I do up here, I guess the difference is the recovery. So I actually would say that the 800, eight, yeah, 800 specific stuff is not very different to what I do at home, because of the air being thinner, you can actually run pretty quick up here. So that's quite nice, because it gives me a bit of a boost, because I actually can run quicker up here than I can at sea level.
Yeah, sure, but for a short period of time.
For the session. So, if you're doing 200 reps, less than 400, sort of interval sessions, then you can actually run pretty quick. So that's where I find actually that gives me a real boost. It's the stuff that's over 400 meters, slightly more aerobic, that is a lot more difficult. And that's where you sort of have to extend the recoveries and do it a lot more to feel, particularly for the interval stuff that's sort of 15, 3K pace. Because for tempo, I just do that all to heart rate. I know my specific zones before I come here. So I had testing just before I left to get those, so that I'm not sort of working too hard. I'm in that threshold zone. But for the 15, 3K stuff, that's very much off just feel. I kind of know how that should feel, intensity wise. So you are obviously running slower than you would be at home, but yeah, only the other day I did some 400s with Millie and Amy, and they had 20. I actually did 16 for the first time because we were running a little bit slower, but the recoveries were a lot more than I would have at home. So it's just very much, I think, being a bit intuitive with it. And given that I've been coming here quite a while, I think it's easier for me to be intuitive now than it was, say, 9 years ago when I first came.
Say you're working to heart rate. I saw on your Instagram the other day that you're doing a tempo at Moy Ben. So even Moy Ben's like a little lower than a 10 and a little flatter than a 10. It's still not an easy place to run. Are you able to be sort of quite calm and quite okay with the fact that you're running much slower than you would be at sea level? Because I know some athletes still go to a 10, and even though in theory they know, okay, at home I'm going to do my tempo run at X, it's going to be X plus whatever at sea level, I mean at a 10. When you actually get into that situation, some athletes find it a little bit difficult to kind of accept just how different it is pace-wise.
Yeah, me.
Yeah, I think I've just I think I've just always been one of those people that I just kind of accept where I am at that given point, and you know, I try and give as much as I can on that in that moment, but pace and I guess those sort of goals don't mean as much to me. I think particularly because I've been here when I, like I say, when I was younger, I was, you know, not even running probably 30 miles a week, and now I'm running more like 65, almost 70 miles a week. So just being here and actually, you know, able to do so much more than I could do before is a massive like, oh, look how far I've come. So I think I'm very much like, I'll just do what I need to do today, and my heart rate saying this is enough. So that's what I'll do.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah. It's a great. That's a great approach to have. But yeah, as Callum kind of alluded
Yeah.
to there, it's not always that simple. That's
No.
yes.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I think it's a real challenge, especially if you don't have that. I guess maybe is that like because I'm looking back to my younger self thinking, gosh, I'm doing so much more than I could have done. I'm running quicker than I could have done X amount of years ago. But if you don't have that reference and it's just the reference at home you're comparing to, that must be challenging.
If I do a tempo run on Moy Ben specifically, I've started doing it without a watch now. Just so I like I then I can run purely to effort and feel, and I don't have
Okay.
anything telling me how slowly I'm running, basically.
Do you ever do them to heart rate?
No, but only because I didn't have a heart rate monitor, but I've recently got it.
Okay.
So I might next time I go, I might try that. Yeah.
So I still have, this might sound really silly, and if someone understands the physiology better than me, then one of you two can educate me here. But if you run exactly the same heart rate at a 10, say at any altitude as you would at home, are you not just negating the fact that you're at altitude, so you may as well not be there?
So, in what context for threshold
So
specifically?
again, I don't run to heart rate, and I'm quite good at running to feel, and I'm quite good at accepting what pace I need to run at, particularly if I'm at altitude, because you know, like yourself, I'm relatively experienced with it. But say if I know I do all my runs at home at, let's just use a random figure of a, what 150 beats per minute. Let's say if I go and run at the same heart rate in a 10, I'm gonna lose, like I may, because I may, because I'm not working any harder than I do at home.
So my understanding of the reason you go to altitude to train is because when you're at altitude, it's not to do with the effort, it's to do with the stimulus the reduction of the percentage of oxygen provides. So your body can kind of realize that there's not as much oxygen in the air. Therefore, your body responds by producing more red blood cells so that it can get the oxygen that there is around to the muscles more quickly. So then when you go back to sea level, you have those benefits still in the system that lasts for a certain amount of time. So you've adapted to that. So, but I don't think the effort per se, really comes into play, because
Yeah.
the stimulus that you're responding to isn't a heart rate stimulus, it's an oxygen related stimulus.
I don't think I'm. It's difficult for me to even kind of put my own thoughts
Are
into.
you? Are you kind of referring to, so if you're running at the same heart rate as you would at sea level, you're not going to get any fitter? Is that kind of what you're
Essentially,
thinking?
yeah. Yes,
Okay.
essentially that. Yeah, you're kind of,
So
you're going to altitude
I
in order because it's a bit harder, but then you're taking that away by running at the same heart rate at home.
So for me, I don't wear a heart rate monitor now on my easy runs or for my sessions. So for me, it's very much so I keep it for the threshold so that I'm in that zone for threshold and I'm actually hitting that window, I guess, because it's very easy to spill over into high end or yeah, intervals, I guess. So for easy running, I think you're right, you're sort of running to feel, and there's a lot of hills around here where you'll go up the hill and your heart rate will spike and then you'll run down the hill and it'll drop. So I think there is a level of intuition with that, and that comes with time. But I think if for first timers, if they're coming to this height, it's better to not overcook it.
Yeah,
So
sure.
going with that heart rate for your easy runs, great, but obviously you're going to be working harder in sessions that your heart rate is going to be high because that's how you get fitter. So that's the I think that's the way I would probably look at it. Like use your heart rate loosely for easy runs, definitely use it for threshold, and then for high intensity stuff, like you're working as hard as you can anyway. So that's how you move things along, or I do anyway.
Yeah, no, I think that makes a lot of sense, but I do think there must be a balancing act in there somewhere because, like you say, for your threshold specifically, you're trying to hit a specific zone. But if you were going to go out and do an easy run, especially in, say, your first 4, 5, 6 days in a 10 with the hills, with the altitude, I genuinely think I'd have to walk up the hills to maintain the same heart rate that I do at home. I don't know what you think, Carl,
Yeah.
but like, yeah, those first couple of runs, I definitely think I'd be walking if I had to maintain the same heart rate as I get here.
Yeah, I often do walk up the steeper hills, to be fair.
Okay, well
I definitely did that the
maybe that's
first
where I'm
time I
going wrong
came
then.
here. Yeah.
Yeah, and to be totally honest, that is actually a piece of advice I would give to anyone going to somewhere like E10 for the first time. Like, don't be afraid to, walk even or like really slowly jog up the hills, and just don't be afraid to do that because the altitude alone is a big stimulus on the body. Then adding in the hills in addition to that altitude creates two very different and intense stimulus that, combined can be too much. So I would say, like, if you get to a steep hill, don't be afraid to go to a crawling pace if that's what you need to do.
Okay, it's interesting you bring that up now because I did feel like I had you under a lot of pressure on some of the hills in last September. But yeah,
I was flagging.
that makes sense now. So Adele, what is life like back home compared to life in a tent for you? Like for you specifically, like how you're on a training camp, obviously you're there with kind of one thing on your mind essentially, but what about a normal week? Not on a training camp. Like, are you working? Are you a full-time athlete? Are you keeping yourself super busy, or is it pretty similar in that you're kind of one track mind? That whole run, sleep, eat mantra.
So I definitely think that when I'm in a training camp, it's solely about running, recovering, just chilling in between and making sure that I'm maximizing my sessions. But yeah, when I'm at home, so I'm based in St. Mary's in Twickenham. I've been coached by Craig Wimrow for the last 10 years and sort of live in the area. So I pretty much I would say that I'm a full-time athlete now. I'm very lucky to be sponsored by Hoka, have been for the last 2 years. And yeah, that allows me to be able to train full time. But I would say I'm the kind of person that I need to be sort of stimulated creatively as well. I'm also a trained makeup artist, and every now and again, when sort of w work pops up, I tend to just schedule a bit of work on a rest day. It's something that I really enjoy, and it's a really nice outlet for me to be creative. But I just think it's a time for me to kind of just like, I guess, be away from sport and kind of be in a different environment and come back to the track refreshed. So that's why I really enjoy that sort of thing. I'm also an ambassador for the British Dyslexic Association and Dementia UK as well. So I work quite closely with them to just raise awareness around those two things that I'm quite passionate about. So that kind of takes up a little bit of my time around training too. But in general, it's not too dissimilar. I think when you're at home, there's a lot more distractions, I would say. Obviously, I probably meet up with my friends, family, busy myself and find work where I can, more than I would if I was on a training camp. But I think I need that balance as an athlete. I'm one of those people that enjoys, just having a bit of downtime mentally, as well as away from sport, and then coming back kind of refreshed.
Yeah, so I mean, I'd love to ask some meaningful follow-up questions on the makeup stuff, but I'm gonna struggle. I don't know if Callum's got any. I mean, but yeah. So maybe can you tell us a little bit more then about the, sorry, what was it called? The British Dyslexic Association, did you call it?
Yeah, so it's basically a charity. They work to kind of, I guess their overall project, project is to increase specialist teaching assessors in schools all across the UK. And because I'm dyslexic and also dyscalculic, which is basically dyslexia but with numbers, I kind of feel really passionately as a neurodiverse person to just inform people of what that actually means, what it looks like, to try and be slightly open-minded with people who do have neurodiversities, and sort of embrace that as well and celebrate that, because I know that's something that in a lot of different areas is not always celebrated, and can sort of marginalize people who are neurodiverse. So I think it's important to kind of talk about, but also spread a bit of positivity in that
Yeah, quite. So
Do you
my
find
no go on.
that it affects your training, Adele?
I definitely think when it comes to the numerical things,
Yeah,
that's something
that's
that I
exactly what I was thinking.
find particularly challenging. I think for me, like, numbers have always been a bit of a struggle, but when it comes to track sessions and I see all the information written down, and it can be quite overwhelming, Craig's really great at just being like, you know what, you have 3 laps, 4 laps, 2 laps today, 4 times. And that's all I need to know. And I'll just be like, Craig, what's the recovery? And he'll sort of feed that back to me. So on a training camp, I just make sure, because I've got a little bit more time on my hands, I'm well revised before I head out to the track. But yeah, he's really good at communicating that kind of stuff.
How much support did you feel you had coming up through the school system? Because my wife has dyslexia, and it wasn't until she wasn't officially diagnosed, I think, until probably about, I might get this wrong, but I want to say like year 10 or year 11. And up until that point, she was just constantly, it was constantly like, oh yeah, we don't worry too much about don't worry too much about English and things, because you're never going to be able to do that. Focus on the art and the technology, because you're always going to struggle with this. And yeah, then it just kind of like, as soon as it was officially diagnosed, she was then able to access support. But yeah, up until that point, it was definitely viewed as like, you're the fit kid kind of, which is obviously really unfair.
No, absolutely. I think a lot of people have that reality, because I mean, I think it's something like 80% of dyslexics leave school without a diagnosis. I was really fortunate to my mum, so like pretty much every member of my family has some sort of neurodiversity. My mum, my sister, my brother, they've all experienced their difficulties as well, but my mum in particular was really great at just sort of pushing that and kind of recognizing that. No, I was really capable, but I needed support in certain areas, and she made sure that I got into a school when we did move to the UK that had a specialist teaching assessor in the school. So I was actually diagnosed as dyslexic when I was 7, so I did have that support very early on for my dyslexia, which is probably why I was able to sort of get by and manage a lot better in secondary school when it came to the literacy side of things. I actually wasn't diagnosed as dyscalculia. Ick, dyscalculic. It's actually a really hard word to say if you are
Yeah, I've not heard that word.
dyslexic. Until I was like 15, and I definitely have noticed that's the thing that creeps into my everyday a lot more, that I find really challenging to manage. And it's probably because I did have a real lack of support, because there wasn't as much research and knowledge around that side of things when I was younger.
I can't quite remember what you said on the end of Dyslexic UK Foundation and something else, but I can't remember what you said. Sorry.
Dementia UK, yeah.
Yes,
So
sorry,
I'm Dementia
that was it.
UK first challenge event ambassador for Dementia UK.
Yeah, okay. And whereabouts does that come from in your life? Is that something that's kind of close to you as well?
Yeah, so my grandma, my late grandma, she passed away in 2016, was dementia a couple of years before she passed, and it was a real struggle for particularly my mum as a single parent. My grandma was almost like the second parent for me, and so that was I guess it took a real it was a real struggle for the family. And I
Sure.
think in 2019, when I first got involved with the British Dyslexic Association and Dementia UK, I think I'd had a bit of a difficult season. I was a full-time athlete at that point, and I probably wasn't throwing myself into as much of the things that I try to do on the regular, creative-wise, now. And I was really looking for just a space to just kind of express what I was passionate about, help where I could. I guess it was kind of a way of finding meaning through my running, as well as just things I was passionate about. And so I did speak to someone at Dementia UK, and they were kind of like, we'd actually really love to have a challenge event ambassador, and we want to talk to people more about the effects that exercise can have, a real positive effect on your brain health, and there's a real link into sort of reducing the risk of dementia, and that link with exercise. And I'm just about to do a campaign with them actually about this in a couple of weeks' time, which I'm really excited about, because there's some really interesting new research on, how amazing exercise really is for our brain. So it's something I'm really passionate about, along with neurodiversities and things like that. So that's kind of why I got involved.
Yeah, nice. No, it's
So
really interesting.
you mentioned at one point when you're going through that, you mentioned when you moved to the UK. What age was that?
So I first moved to the UK, I think, when I was 7 years old. So we lived in Jamaica previous to that. I went to school there. My mum actually set up a school, which eventually got government funding, which is probably a lot to do with why she kind of recognised that I really thrived in that environment where things were quite practical and hands-on. And when I came to the UK school system and it was very different, that was really challenging for me. So I lived in Jamaica growing up, and grew up in the hills in Manchester. So a very outdoorsy sort of amazing environment to grow up in. And something that I would say my first experiences of running kind of came from that space. Obviously Jamaica has a rich history with running in particular, and athletics, so that's something that's sort of always kind of been embedded in me. But I sort of grew up running in the hills, and I think that's probably why I actually really love being as well.
Quite right. So can we delve a little bit into the move then back to represent Jamaica from GB? Because yeah, I mean I don't know the story at all. The first I mean, or even if there is a story, I don't know if there's anything significant to say, but I was sat watching the World Champs, and all of a sudden, Adele Tracy Jamaica was introduced on the screen, and I just thought, "Hang on, when did that happen?" And yeah, I mean, to an outsider, it seems like, "Oh wow, okay, that's interesting." And yeah, it's something I knew nothing about. And yeah, is that something you're able to tell us about?
Yeah, sure. So I guess, like I said before, growing up in Jamaica, I was actually born in the US. I should mention that, because
Okay.
a lot of people look a bit confused about my roots.
So where were you
Yeah,
born?
so I was born in Seattle.
Okay.
That's where my parents met. My dad was a Husky, and he represented Jamaica, but he was got a scholarship to the US. I was born in the US, but spent my early years growing up in Jamaica. We moved there quite soon after I was born. So I've kind of always identified as being a British Jamaican. My mum's British, my dad's Jamaican, but my dad actually ran for Jamaica. He was a 400 meter runner, and I think I just sort of have always known that. And even as a kid at school, obviously having my struggles with academics, I always gravitated towards running because it was something that I was good at and I enjoyed. And knowing that my dad did it as well, I actually always thought when I was younger that I would run for Jamaica. Not to say that takes anything away from my British experience, because I was just as proud to wear a British vet as I am to work at a Jamaican vet now. I think it's just more, you know, when we moved to the UK, when my parents separated, you know, you sort of, you grow up through the system. So I went to English schools and I made my first team when I was 15 and actually didn't realise that, yeah, I guess I never really thought about what that sort of meant and that significance. So with the rules that surround a change of allegiance within World Athletics, you can't change allegiance unless you have 3 years out of the sport competing at an international level. So it was actually only in 2021 when I missed out on the Olympic team that my partner and I realised, actually, I had Great Britain since 2019. And so, yeah, just I think that not having that opportunity in the past and just thought, you know what, I actually really love to represent my heritage and just have that opportunity. There's not very many people that can say that they have been able to represent.
Yeah, sure. Countries. Yeah, to represent both countries of your.
Yeah, and I just thought, you know, this is a real opportunity for me, but also it's extremely meaningful to me as well.
So did you already have Jamaican nationality?
So my dad actually lives in Jamaica and I'd sort of been over to see family and things like that and connect with my grandma as well because it had been some years. So I actually didn't have a passport, but yeah, had citizenship. So there were a few things that I needed to do to get a passport to be able to change allegiance. Because of COVID, it took a little bit longer than I anticipated. So by the time I actually knew that I was going to be able to switch, it was the week of British Championships. So I actually, for me, it was a little bit of a stressful process, not knowing if, you know, I ultimately wanted to make the switch, but it was just the timing was, yeah, a real concern.
I guess COVID gave you the opportunity to, like, there were much fewer competing opportunities for Great Britain in general anyway. So I guess that gave you the break you needed from competing for GB to then switch allegiance to Jamaican team.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if there's one thing, you know, one blessing that's come out of COVID, I would say 100% for me, that was it.
A follow-up question I do then have on a similar thing. Now representing Jamaica rather than representing Britain, but still living in the UK, so still being sort of in and amongst the system, inverted commas, has that changed anything for you? Like, does it affect sort of access to services and treatment? Does it affect like funding? Does it affect being able to go on training camps and things and have physio support or financial support? And yeah, sort of, yeah. Yeah. And the other way around, like, are there, presumably there are positive aspects of it?
Yeah, I think to be honest, yeah, of course I'm based in the UK, but I spend a lot of the year away, and that's something that I've kind of always said. You know, I almost spend like half the year in different locations for where I need to be for running, for racing at altitude. So I think it's very much, yeah, I just go where I need to be, basically. But in terms of like accessing everything, like, I haven't been reliant on the British system in quite a few years, probably since 2019. And a lot of the people that I've always had connections to have kind of been external to that. So Craig, you know, is very much associated to St Mary's in Twickenham. I've always sort of been based there. My S&C coach is also based in the area. And my brother actually does my soft tissue. So I've been really lucky that I've never relied heavily on the system, although I have benefited from it, I would say, at certain points in my career. And I have an amazing support team in HOKA as well, who have been really great at just kind of supporting the switch, but also, you know, helping me to sustain my life as a full-time athlete through that as well. So, yeah, I have to say that I've been very, very fortunate.
Your partner's a decent pacemaker as well, isn't he?
Yeah, he's pretty great. I'd say that, yeah, Ben, so Ben used to be a 1500 meter runner and steeplechaser. He retired in 2016 and pretty much since then has become my training partner, which is Yeah, amazing, because he does all my sessions with me. He doesn't do the running, but that's fair enough.
This
I
is
think if I was retired,
but
I
do
wouldn't
you
do the
know Ben
jogging
Callum?
either.
Well, I was going to say this is going back probably as far as maybe 15 years ago, but I used to race his brother Harry.
Oh, did you? Wow, what
Yeah.
a small world.
Yeah, I mean it's going back because I think we must have been like under 13, maybe under 15 at a push, and then I didn't really see him
Okay.
much after that, but yeah, he was Harry was like one of those kids who was like incredible for his age. I think he ran 440 or something for 1500 when he was like 13, which is yeah, he was near the top of the UK rankings and lived near me in the same region, so we crossed paths quite a
Okay.
bit. But yeah, never met
Oh,
Ben, but
cool.
yeah, met his brother a few times.
So
Yeah,
I've
no,
got
I knew Harry was really good when he was younger, so that's kind of cool to hear, actually.
Adele, I've got a very tenuous link as well. So I've never met Ben, but I know Richard Goodman quite well.
Oh, great. Yeah.
Yeah, who
So you know
I
him a
think
bit.
is business partner with your partner. Is that correct?
Yeah, he is indeed. Yeah, Athlete Money is their co-founder. So little shout out for
Yeah,
them.
so I, funnily enough, I know Goodman almost entirely through a 10. So we were living there at the time that Richard was spending a lot of time out there.
Didn't you have like a
Oh,
chess club or
great.
something?
Yeah, the 10 chess club. Ask him about
Oh, wow. I didn't know he was into chess.
Well, I can't remember how
That's cool.
involved he was. It was more, I think he was a peripheral member of the Attend Chess Club, probably because he got
Okay,
beat a few
right.
too many times and then didn't come back. But yeah, no, yeah, we used to go down Kerry O'View once a week and sit with a nice cup of tea and play chess in the afternoon.
No,
The
that sounds
training
ideal.
happy days. Happy days.
Yeah,
That's a quite a successful business they've got going now, isn't it?
they're doing really great. I think because of the area that we live in, there's a lot of nannies in the area. Yeah, I used to do a little bit when we were sort of students because the hours are really great for runners as well. Just drop the kids off in the morning and then you go training and then you sort of pick them up from school early afternoon. And yeah, it works really well for the lifestyle of an athlete. And I think where Ben and Richard sort of saw an opportunity was, because they were sort of sporty nannies and they were encouraging a sort of healthy lifestyle for the kids as well. I think the parents really appreciated that. So that's kind of how athlete nannies and nannies sort of happened. Yeah.
Great. So Callum, do you know what we're talking about?
I've
Right.
obviously seen this athlete manny's. Yeah.
No, it's great. Yeah, I remember when they were first setting it up, and yeah, Rich was saying like they was gonna essentially. So I don't know if it's evolved over, it's a decade probably since I was talking to Richard about it. But yeah, it was sort of like essentially sports people doing nanny and nanny manny type work, but providing healthy activities for the kids as the main service rather than just like, yeah, plonk them in front of the TV. Is that a very rough?
Basically, yeah, they have like loads of different nannies now. It's sort of like more enthusiastic individuals, but they have specific sports nannies as well. Athletes love that kind of work because it's flexible. It works with the sort of training lifestyle. So yeah, they're doing really well actually, and it's been really cool to watch it grow over the years.
Yeah,
Yeah, brilliant.
backtracking a little bit to when we were talking about your kind of your home life and hobbies that you have outside of running. I have it on good authority that you've been very involved in renovating your house recently. I'm interested in talking about this because I'm by no means a professional athlete, but I am someone who's trying to be as good at running as I can. And I found it really hard to do any kind of home renovation. I recently bought a house, well, coming up for 2 years ago now, and was quite hands-on with the redecorating and little bits of renovating. And I found it so hard to combine that with training, just because it's fairly kind of, hands-on, and you're not quite recovering as well as you would. Even something as simple as painting a bedroom, I found, oh, I'm just a bit exhausted after that.
Yeah, this is kind of where Ben is like, you almost have to hold me back a little bit because I love that sort of thing. I find painting really therapeutic. I do not find the prep therapeutic. That's
Right.
pretty labor intensive. But yeah, it's very much just thinking about what I have coming up. Do I have the energy for it today? I have a rest day every week and I am supposed to be resting, but I usually use that to do something to the house, even if it's like upcycling something or, you know, painting a wall or what have you. I just think it's a really nice creative outlet for me. And yeah, we're really excited about it. I absolutely love that stuff. It's like I have like a little home account on Instagram, and I'm not gonna lie, I'm logged into that most of the time and not in my main one, just so I can scroll interiors basically. Yeah, I think just when you achieve that milestone, and I think it was a big milestone for me and Ben, it's just kind of exciting to make a place like your own and your home. And I just, yeah, I love it as a creative outlet. So I'm going to do it where I can. But yeah, you're right. Physically, you just have to be mindful of what you have coming up. Definitely for me, I'm kind of not really doing much house renovating when I'm in my full track season. But definitely the last couple of months, just building up to New Year's before I was away, I tried to do as much as I could just to, yeah, I guess play catch up.
Yeah. Are you doing anything kind of like structural to the house or anything, or is it kind of more interior design, decoration?
Yeah, I think we will eventually. It's just a little two bed Victorian terrace, so two up, two down. I think one day we'll sort of try and do a bit more of a open plan kitchen sort of situation. But in the meantime, we're sort of just doing little DIY upcycling things while we save for that bigger side of the project. So yeah, it's very much a work in progress, but yeah, something I kind of find really fun.
Yeah,
really. A couple of Diamond League victories this summer to get the budget for the kitchen.
Yeah, I hope so.
Are you at a stage now where you're already looking ahead, planning summer races? Is that on the radar now, or are we not quite at that stage yet?
So in terms of the races I'll do in the build-up to championships, not really. I think we'll probably start chatting about that sort of stuff March, April time, and planning that spring camp, just kind of focusing on indoors and yeah, kind of what I've got coming. I actually don't have a schedule yet. I find like race schedule plans are quite last minute in general, but it's kind of just having in mind what you'd like to do and the ideal situation, like a plan A, B and C, and just seeing what kind of comes up really. But yeah, obviously this year is another world championship, which is really and I do have the time for the 800 and the 50, so it's just about performing well at trials and yeah, hopefully having a smooth build up to that. So me and my coach are just kind of looking at how we can, I guess, get better over the 1500. The last year was the first year I kind of really focused on it, but we didn't change too much mileage wise. And then this year we've just been trying to focus on getting a little bit more running behind me to see how that looks.
So even though you've already got the time, you'll have to go back to Jamaica to run the trials over there just to like confirm selection, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you have to be at trials, and yeah, it's a really nice opportunity for me to go and see family and go back to the island. So yeah, I'll be looking forward to that.
Yeah. Do you like Jamaican music, Adele?
Yeah. My parents actually used to have a sound system when I was a kid. So we used to always set it up on a Sunday and have a barbecue and stuff. And yeah, I was a big fan of like dancehall, reggae. Like my mum loved it all. So I'm very much my mother's daughter.
Yeah, no, I was trying to get Callum to listen to a few things in Kenya, but he was pretending he was but I don't think he... See, my do you know James Hedger? Does that name mean anything to you?
No, do you know what? I'm much better with faces.
So basically, he's my next door neighbour, and he works as a soft tissue therapist for British Athletics. Okay. So I think Amy and I forgot the name of
Millie.
Who else you out with? Amy and
Millie.
Amy and Millie, I'm sure I know him. He treats it high pack in Loughborough. So he's my next door neighbour, and his mum is Jamaican. And yeah, he about 7 or 8 years ago, he introduced me to some Jamaican music that I'd never even entertained the idea before. And yeah, it's all just quickly became some of my favorite music. So yeah, now I'm a middle aged white guy who listens to all kinds of
reggae.
Cool. Yeah, I still can't really I don't really know the difference between dancehall, reggae, afrobeats. Like I just know I like some music, but I don't really know like what. So I like maybe you can tell me. I like Chronics, I like Coffee. I like
Okay.
Damian Marley. I like Protégé. Like they're the ones
Yeah,
that sort of spring to head immediately.
I'd say
But I
like
don't really know
Coffee and
what.
like Damian Martin, slightly more reggae, like Afrobeats, I would say.
Yeah, is that stuff you listen to? So I'm kind of,
Yeah,
yeah. Anyway, yeah, no, I'm embarrassing myself. I say as a nearly 40-year-old white man trying to listen to like young people's Jamaican music. But yeah, no, I love it. It's really cool. Okay, brilliant. I mean, Adele, thank you. Thank you so much. I think that's probably a good place to leave it. We've covered a lot of ground there. I don't know if there's anything, Callum, have you got any final questions or final comments?
But one thing I was going to ask you is if you had any kind of what your major goals were for this season, but you already touched on world champs. Do you have any like time related goals or any, yeah, like what are your, if you sit down and look ahead towards the season upcoming, what are your goals basically?
Yeah, so like I guess the major goal is world championships, and I think if I can and I'm in a good place, I'd love to do the double again, because that's something that I've previously not had the opportunity to do, and kind of exploring, but it's really important to me. Like the 800 is kind of like my baby, and then the 1500 is like really new and exciting. So I think I'm looking forward to kind of just yeah, trying to improve over both distances. But I think my coach is keen for me to just try and do a little bit more of an endurance build up and just see how that kind of looks. So I'm hoping to maybe race a 3K indoors, and then also see kind of what that strength looks like in the speedier races. So do a couple of eights and see how, if strength equals speed. So yeah, indoors is very much for us to kind of explore, seeing as there's no wild indoors this year. Just trying to get an idea of yeah, where I can make improvements basically. And yeah, I'm really excited about that.
Yeah. Do you still run for a club in the UK?
Yeah, I still run for Guildford and Godalming AC, have been since I was 11 years old. So
Yeah,
yeah,
you could.
still.
You can still do the British champs then, for example.
I don't know. It's not something that
It'll
I've.
probably be a very similar time of year, if not the exact same time as the Jamaican champs.
Well, I was thinking
Yeah,
more in
if it's
indoors.
like last year, then it was the same time. But yeah, I don't actually know. I know that they do that for cross country. They have invitational places, but I don't know if the indoors you have to invite or you can just run at the trials, because in the Jamaican trials, anyone can run at the Jamaican trials. So
Right, interesting.
yeah.
Yeah, that's just suddenly reminded me. I said we'll end. That has reminded me. So when you hooked up with the Jamaican national team for the first time, like I know you're a professional athlete yourself, but did you have any sort of was there any sort of moments of starstruck or like, oh my God, there's Shelly-Ann Fraser-Pryce or there's some of their other incredible sort of top superstars?
Oh, absolutely. I feel like the Jamaican team is a pretty iconic team to be a part of, and absolutely the first time that I sort of well, this summer in Eugene, there was these sort of moments where I've been like, wow, you're really fast. I'm sat at a table with you, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah,
So
teammate now.
it's definitely happened a lot. And that's not to say that, it's not the case on the British team as well. There's been moments like that too. So
Yeah, of
I
course.
think yeah, it's been really fun to sort of experience what it's like to be part of a new team and celebrate their success with that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you. Okay, brilliant. I think let's wrap it up there, Carl. I think that's been a really good, really good chat. Thanks, Adele. I really appreciate that. Yeah,
No
support.
problem. It's been cool
Awesome.
chatting with
Awesome
you
to say.
guys.
How much longer are you out in Kenya for?
So I'm here until the 30th of January, so a couple more weeks. And yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to it. I usually come for like 3.5, 4 weeks, so it's about
Yeah.
that, I think.
Yeah, perfect. So I'd say make sure you get yourself down to Kerry with you for pancakes and Mikado.
Oh yeah, definitely. I will absolutely be in that, and an Alvaro.
Yes, oh, they're lovely, aren't they? Yeah,
So good.
out of a glass bottle.
The Mango Julius is the go-to for me.
Mango Julius.
Oh, what's a mango Julius?
It's on the secret menu. You have to ask for the Callum knows about this secret
There's a
menu for the
hidden
Is
cocktail
it just a?
but,
Oh, is it?
but, but basically
Okay.
there's another menu that the waitresses there can't really be bothered to make, so they don't tell you about it. But if you specifically ask for the Mango Julius menu, then they pull out an entire another menu of smoothies and cocktails
Oh
and things.
wow. Oh, cool. That sounds kind of so. When I was here last time, Tom Lancashire made a drink which was called a Sprango, and it was just half Sprite, half mango juice. So I was like, oh, maybe somebody's already created this Mango
It could
Julius.
be
What's
mango Julius. What's in it, Callum?
So that's more like it's like an ice cream mango-y, creamy smoothie. So not ideal before like a
Great.
hard training session, but pretty nice after a hard training session.
Yeah, maybe after a Sunday long run, I feel like that would bang. That sounds good.
Oh, the dream. Yeah, the dream. Nice.
Right,
Cool.
Adele, thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of your rest day. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Thanks.
Cool. Thanks, Adele.
Thanks for listening to Conversations About Running, the podcast from Running Trips. We are the people behind the Kenya Experience and Training Focus Camps. Training camps for runners of all levels in Kenya and the United Kingdom. To find out more about Running Trips, head to our website at www.runningtrips.co.uk or follow us on Insta at running_trips_official. We hope you enjoyed today's episode, and until next time, happy running.